Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services, public hearing, and we'll have a work session on House Bill 2151 relating to foreign physicians. And who's with us? Barry Cass and Katie. Are you coming up with Barry? Are you coming up later for the other bill? And George back there, don't go hiding.
Madam Chair.
Everybody might as well come right on up now. You know. Mm-hmm. And do we have anyone signed up besides the agency?
It's really good magazines. Okay. It's every week I can read and get through. But
someone, like, let's see.
He would.
I'm not quite sure. Anna? Two unknown value coins.
I didn't know about that, but it sounds like that.
Rosie's Blue. Oh, this is how much we have so far. Uh-oh, we've got to get busy, guys.
We got some totals?
Well, we have some totals. Rosie's $325.90, and Rosette is $76.50.
Uh-oh.
However, someone, and if we ever find out who did it, added a peso, $2 in Mexican. And then it looks like Bundy Republic. Looks like German.
Bet you, Mark.
Yeah.
Looks like it might be with a lot more.
Well, maybe. Anyway, we have some. We'll take the douches. You can be prolific with your acronyms today, because Rosie is hungry. With that, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Barry Cast. I'm the Assistant Director for Health Services at the Department of Human Services, and I brought Joel Young with me today, who works for Dr. Higginson and is responsible for working issues relating to professional health shortages and the like, and has an interest in management responsibility for the waiver program that we're going to be talking about. We've provided the committee with testimony on 2151, and I just wanted to make a couple of comments, and then if there are questions, Joel can respond to them in detail. Last week, when we were before you, the question came up about frontier counties in Oregon. And there actually is a designation for areas with less than 6 persons per square mile. Oregon is one of those states that has a large portion of its landmass as frontier. And yet about 10% of our population lives in outlying areas. To recognize the fact that recruiting health professionals to such areas is difficult, the federal government took a number of steps some years ago, particularly during the farm crisis, to make it possible for us to extend waivers to certain medical graduates from who were foreign nationals so that they could work in this country for an extended period of time in areas designated as health shortage areas. In Oregon, 31 counties right now have at least one health professional shortage area, and a third of the state is considered medically underserved. And in these underserved areas, it is very difficult to attract enough physicians to care for patients, despite very aggressive prolonged recruitment. I would add that one of those problems is in our own state hospital in Pendleton, which is now entirely staffed with foreign nationals with medical degrees who are under this waiver program. For a long time, the United States Department of Agriculture ran this program, and sometime after the September 11th events, that program was suspended. The federal CONRAD program enables participating states to assume the role of an interested government agency and to sponsor up to 30 J-1 waiver applications per state each year. We currently have 21 physicians who are employed through these waivers. And while it's a relatively small number, it is critical for communities that are unable to attract healthcare professionals through other means. Now, the reason that this bill is important to us is that in addition to recognizing statutorily this waiver program, it enables us to charge a fee for bringing this, for evaluating and extending this program to a physician. And we would set that fee at $2,000 as an application fee. The fee is not a general fund. It comes from either the employer or the physician, him or herself. And at 30 potential slots per year, we're talking about $60,000. This program is called the CONRAD program. It used to be that the governor could designate 20 physicians. That was increased recently to 30. We don't anticipate additional costs within the department, but that potentially we could contract the work done in following through on the applications. States who have such programs in place and who recruit under this mechanism report that they have a high retention rate, and certainly that's been our experience in Pendleton, and a high level of satisfaction with the program. I want to point out that in some circles it's been discussed as recruitment for foreign medical graduates. That is actually not the case. We're talking about medical graduates of United States medical schools and residency programs who were trained here, who have the necessary skills, but because of their nationality would be otherwise restricted from practicing. We've worked cooperatively with rural hospitals and clinics and with the Primary Care Association to make sure that this program continues in the future and that our rural parts of our state and underserved parts of our state continue to have access to care. And with that, we I want to say in addition that this bill was pre-session filed. We worked hard on this bill, and we've had a good deal of assistance from Dr. Bates in moving this forward and bringing it to this point. And thank you, sir.
Thank you. Reverend Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I appreciate the governor's office bringing forward House Bill 2151. In my community of Heppner, we've actually had to deal with this issue several times. The one question I have, however, is other than the Department of Human Services making the recommendation to the United States Department of State, what do we get out of this, other than the recommendation? Yeah, I apologize, I came in late, Chair Winters, and so I may be asking a question that was already asked. But if, as I understand it, the authorization still has to come at the federal level.
Senator Winters, Representative Smith, the state's role in the CONRAD program is to actually do the background work to request a waiver. So we have to develop a set of criteria guidelines, and then when there is an interested party, interested clinic, they then submit a request to us, and it's our job to make sure that all of that information is there to be assured that the person is, in fact, waiverable. But you are correct. Once we submit that documentation, it goes to the State Department, who then works with INS, and it's the federal government who actually grants the waiver. But without our intermediary role, there would be no process for that waiver to be granted.
Just a quick follow-up. Just so I'm very clear then, does the federal government require the intermediary to ensure that the applicants are waiverable?
Senator Winters, Representative Smith, I believe the government in practice does require that. I'm not aware of other places, other states, where somebody can simply themselves as an individual submit such a waiver request.
Just one last question, just so I'm clear. So the practice in the past has been for, in a rural area when a hospital or a clinic needs a physician, to work through your department to make the request to the federal government.
Senator Winters and Representative Smith, that's generally correct. However, preceding the CONRAD program, the USDA, Federal U.S. Department of Agriculture, operated a similar program. Then at a certain point, they terminated that involvement in the program. So prior to our operating CONRAD, people could have gone through that route.
I see. Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Barry, did you have some comments?
Madam Chair, I do not have further comments.
Reverend Bates.
Just real quick, Madam Chair. This is one of these things where I guess great ideas come from more than two places. I submitted this bill pre-session basis too, and withdrew the bill after you submitted yours. physicians who have completed usually a residency in this country, they usually do their medical school somewhere else, but they complete their residency in this country, then are capable of obviously practicing in the country, but they're not allowed to at this time. They can't apply, and they can't be accepted without this, without going through a program of this type. And Oregon did not have this program. Other states did, and we are handicapped near ourselves to that. As an example, there is an oncologist in Southern Oregon right now who treats the entire Southern Oregon area. We're acutely short of oncologists down there. He's from South Africa, completed his training at Northwestern, was offered a job, wanted the job, and is down there practicing right now, but was going to have to leave rather quickly. Previously, the basic rule was if you do a residency in the United States and you are from a foreign country, you have to go back to that country. You're not allowed to stay in this country and practice. And we were actually hurting ourselves. And in fact, we were putting them through these residency programs, the idea being to help the nation they came from. But we were handicapping ourselves because, in fact, we had areas of our country that weren't being properly served. The bill also allows it to be wide enough that this is not just necessarily for rural Oregon. That's where the emphasis will be. But if you have a shortage in inner city Portland, you have a shortage in Roseburg or Medford, of a certain specialty that serves the entire area, it allows you to do that also under administrative rules the department will write. Obviously, they're going to write those primarily for rural Oregon for primary care, but it does not limit you to that. And I've read the proposed administrative rules, and they're excellent. So this is something that's a real win-win for Oregon. It'll bring in qualified physicians. We're going to have, I believe, a physician shortage of significance here the next 3 to 4 years because of the malpractice crisis and because of the decreasing income to physicians under Medicaid and Medicare only in the state of Oregon, not every state. And we are losing physicians, but more importantly, we're not replacing physicians. We have physicians who are retiring or leaving, and we're not bringing new people in because there are places in this country other than Oregon where it's better to practice. So this is an important program, and one I would love to see go for as quickly as possible. We waited 3 or 4 months for this to come out. I want to thank the chair for allowing this discussion today and bringing it forward. Thank you for coming.
Senator Gordley.
Madam Chair, in his comments, Representative Bates answered my question. Thank you.
Another question, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I guess because this is a Ways and Means question, I have to ask a budget. If you folks have been doing this in the past, how have you been funding your operations without the $2,000
Senator Winters, Representative Smith, we've been borrowing time from staff who have actually other duties and other responsibilities, and they've been gracious enough to be able to squeeze this in, but that doesn't feel like a practical long-term solution.
George.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. This bill was anticipated in the governor's printed budget, and there's actually a budget package in the presentation for the health services cluster of the Department of Human Services. So I would recommend that you approve this bill.
Cindy.
Madam Chair, Cindy Jones, Legislative Fiscal. LFO recommends passage of House Bill 2151. It is included in their budget.
Thank you. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, thank you. I am in support of this bill, but I cannot leave unsaid the indictment that will come down against this assembly for having adjourned without addressing the medical malpractice root cause of this problem of why we can't get doctors in this state.
Sorry.
So that being said, I just feel strongly about that.
Senator Morris, you are absolutely correct. The malpractice issue is huge, and it's one that I had thought when we came into this session this time that this body was going to address. This is a small piece compared to what is happening in this state and other states across the country. But I have a question because I'm fully aware not only are we facing the crisis of doctors, but we're also facing the crisis of nurses and part of the other allied health systems. And I don't know whether you're looking at those other pieces as a part of this kind of a concept. We've in our nursing field, individuals are retiring. We don't have a replacement there. We just have a critical health issue in this state. I said when I came back into this building, having been on the executive side and having been involved in health planning in Oregon a lot of years ago, that somehow that has just escaped all of us. We do not plan for health care delivery systems anymore. We haven't done it for a long time, and we haven't looked at from the standpoint of adequacy of staffing throughout the state and how we're going to be able to recruit people into the state to work in our various hospitals and our nursing homes and what have you. And I think if there's one thing that I'd like to see us do is to get back to planning on a health care delivery system for Oregon. You know, we're wrestling with the Oregon Health Plan. Oregon Health Plan is one small piece of an overall bigger problem, as I think, and I'm not the expert, but I think it's one piece of an overall bigger problem that the state is going to have to tackle and address, and not the least of is the malpractice piece that's a part of it. Just have to say that because I think those of us who sit here are kind of frustrated because we're not in the policy committee that has to address this. And I would hope, Barry, that your agency is thinking the same way that we are, that we really do need to look at the health care delivery systems.
Madam Chair, thank you. We do indeed. And one of the 10 essential functions of a public health system is to promote and to work with systems planning to assure that there is access for needed health care. And that is Mr. Young's responsibility in the Office of the State Public Health Officer. And I can't resist the opportunity to bring to your attention when we get to work session that this is one of the items that is still in question in the budget discussions, and we need to have an opportunity, I think, to delineate for you all of the things that we do in health access planning and with respect to physicians, primary care access, the nursing shortage, and other factors which affect the ability of people to get the care they need. I appreciate your recognition of that. Thank you.
I'll see Representative Smith and Representative Bates.
Thank you. How long does it take to process an application?
Senator Winters, Representative Smith, it depends on the completeness of the application, of course, but usually within two to four weeks for most of them, the average being closer to around three, just going back and forth, making sure that they've got everything in the checklist. But once that's for us to process it and move it on, then it takes up to several weeks for the federal government to give us a response.
Just a quick follow-up. So it takes the department, it takes the FTE, the physician, 2 to 4 weeks to gather the necessary information, put the packet together, put the proposal together.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up just for a second on the record, both the comments from Senator Morris and from you. We are going to be facing a health care crisis in this state, I believe, the next 2 to 3 years. And a big part of that is malpractice. We had a bill on the floor of the House today that is a small piece of fixing that with the using the SAFE funds as a backup, basically, for rural physicians. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. And we've been preoccupied, obviously, in this building with the budget shortfall, with balancing our budget, taking care of PERS. But this is something that's not going to go away, and we're going to have to face it. Other states are ahead of the curve on this from the point of view of what they're dealing with. We're right behind them. We're one of the 8 or 10 states that has been targeted as states we know are going to have trouble because of medical malpractice very, very quickly. It's here for rural Oregon already. It will soon be, I believe, a problem for Portland and Eugene. And frankly, when that happens, that's when I expect we'll either have a special session or be back in session dealing with it. Yeah. And I share your concerns. There are several states, West Virginia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania, who have had up to 3 special sessions just for medical malpractice issues. And I'd like to see us deal with it before it reaches that level. It's a very complex and difficult issue, but it's one we're not going to resolve here today. And I share Senator Winter's frustration that this is not a policy committee, this is not the Judiciary Committee, and we can't deal with it at this meeting.
Yes, Representative Bates, when I think about the issue of the number of obstetric and gynecologists, and notice I didn't use the acronym, where we no longer, they're opting out, and that's been going on for some time now because of the malpractice issue. You know, I predict that that's going to grow beyond that particular practice, and it's one that we're on a direct collision course. And I met with a number of the physicians who in my community who are no longer practicing. You know, my grandson was the last that was delivered by one of the physicians here in town. Hmm. And I think that it's huge. And I think we need to keep it out there in the public discussion that we're putting ourselves, from a health standpoint, at tremendous risk. So anyway, I'm not going to belabor that because there's something. Yes?
I'm prepared to give you a motion.
You're prepared to give me. We are in work session. So, Senator Carter.
Madam Chair, I propose that House Bill 2161 relating to foreign physicians and regarding a federal grant be sent to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter recommends that we send to full committee with a due pass recommendation House Bill 2151 relating to foreign physicians. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon,
just for clarification, the motion also included the federal grant.
Well, Senator,
I'm regarding the grant.
That's a second act.
You're right.
So, would you like to withdraw?
Yes. And my motion is House Bill 2151 relating to foreign physicians.
Thank you. The corrected motion of Senator Carter is that we send to full Ways and Means with a due pass House Bill 2151 relating to foreign physicians. Is there any objection? Thank you. Now we can go to the and we'll have Bates to the floor.
Yes.
Now we will go to grant application request.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, this is a request for permission to apply, and Bob Nickel from the Office of Mental Health and Addictions is here to discuss the grant opportunity.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
You know, one of the things we might do, since we're not getting too much in Rosie, is to start charging for if you're from the state of Kansas that you have to contribute.
I'll speak up for him, Madam Chair. He's a transformed Oregonian.
Go ahead, Bob.
Ooh, I have to speak up for you, too, because you're from the state of Kansas.
That's right.
Thank you all.
Where the corn grows awfully tall.
For the record, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm an administrator of the State Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And I'm here to formally request permission to apply for a federal grant, which is entitled State Incentive Grant for Treatment of Persons with Co-Occurring Substance-Related and Mental Disorders. And the grant due date was actually June 13th. We provided legislative notice, I believe, on June 4th. So I think we came in just under the 10-day timeline. The purpose of the grant is essentially to enhance Oregon's capacity to provide effective and evidence-based services to youth and adults with both mental health and substance use problems. And in earlier presentations, we've talked quite a bit about the magnitude of the problem that we have in this state and other states with this. The duration of this grant would be 5 years. Hopefully in plain English, what the grant would do is to hire staff at the state and at the local level to provide coordination and to really bring the state up to speed in terms of its administrative structures, in terms of certain kinds of clinical tools, which include standard screening and assessment tools, also the training of supervisors in order to provide integrated treatment, which is the evidence-based practice for people with both kinds of disorders. The goals would be to improve the regulatory and financing mechanisms and also to do some tweaking of our data systems so that we are better able to provide these kinds of services without a lot of difficulties administratively. And finally, the federal government requires us to evaluate the effectiveness of our improvements. The The way the grant will affect local human services agencies and other DHS, Department of Human Services agencies, is to really increase the ease with which programs out there can actually provide the best quality of care for the many people who suffer from both disorders. Other state agencies will also benefit from this because we also need to work very carefully with organizations like the Department of Corrections and the Children, Adults, and Families section of the Department of Human Services, as well as education, all state agencies that are affected. The budget summary is fairly simple. The first year, $865,222. It's all federal money. There are no other funds involved. There are no general funds annually, and there's no in-kind contribution. I should probably back up just a little bit and say that, the next 2 years have a slight inflation factor built into it, and then the last 2 years are around $600,000. The federal government is providing 100% of funding on this because this is one of their main agenda items, is to get local and state systems to work more effectively with people with co-occurring disorders. So it's a fairly generous offering from the federal government. I've talked with Dr. Wesley Clark, who is one of the key decision makers at the federal level with the Center for Substance Abuse a treatment, and he's very interested in seeing Oregon's application. So I know that we have a reasonable chance of getting this, and there's a lot of interest at the federal level in states like Oregon applying. There will be no general fund required now or after the grant funding period expires. We're requesting two full-time equivalent limited duration positions at the state level for the first 3 years. Is there an information technology component? Yes, there is, and it has to do with the improvement of our data system. So that's a summary of the grant proposal, and be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Morley.
Thank you very much. It's really great to hear about this application and opportunity, and I'm wondering if we should see this as an opportunity to further advance the intent of House Bill 3024, the mental health planning bill from last session, in the absence of state funds, or with state funds having been removed from that planning effort. Should we see this as a blessing that allows us to continue on that path that has been started?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I do think this is very consistent with recommendations from the previous governor's Mental Health Alignment Work Group report and House Bill 3024. I should clarify that this is funding that would not go toward direct services themselves, but to assist the state in really bringing administrative rules up to speed, identifying and then implementing screening and assessment tools so that they're standardized, providing training, and then the evaluation component. So it's really not a direct service offering from the federal government, but I still think that it's part of what we need to be doing. We've worked on this issue in Oregon for over 15 years. We've never really, in my opinion, had the kind of staff time and focused attention to really changing some of the regulatory environment and some of the training needs. So I think it is definitely a great step in the right direction for us.
Thank you.
Question?
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I truly know nothing about this, but I just have a question. Why in mental health, in dealing with mental health disorders, is standardized screening a positive?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, it does seem like it's taken us a long time to get to this point. The screening tool that we're talking about would be for alcohol and drug programs to do a better job of screening for the presence of mental health disorders, and for mental health programs to do a better job of screening for the presence of alcohol and drug disorders. And while that seems like that ought to be pretty much a given, the fields have developed so separately that mental health people often get almost no training or experience in alcohol and drug work, and the same thing tends to apply to alcohol and drug counselors. They don't necessarily get the training in mental health. So it seems like a fairly obvious thing, but in reality, we've struggled with it for a number of years.
Thank you.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob, once we get this body of data, how do we then make the next step to make changes, particularly with respect to third-party providers of services so that we do apply this, what we would hopefully determine to be the best possible practice.
Yeah. Chair Winters, Senator Morris, the third-party providers, I assume you were talking about the, at the direct service level.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ideas that I think is really strong in this particular proposal is to train clinical supervisors around the state so that they then take whatever we are learning to the direct service level. I think one of the errors that we've probably made in the past is to try to train all 6,000 people. You can't do that on limited funds, but you can get to most of the clinical supervisors who are at that level where they can then make sure that the best practices, the evidence-based practices, are implemented through their local program. So I think there's a very direct connection the way this grant is written to get to the third-party providers of services.
Thank you.
Senator Clark.
Barry, I see where this is, the question, statement is made that this will affect your 0103 budget. Since we're rebalancing, did we make arrangements for this to happen?
Sandy.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I think that you're on the fiscal for the House Bill 2151. Did you get a copy? Because I have that.
You're back on 2151.
I'm a page late. I should have asked you on the other program. I'm fine.
Any additional questions? I know we've all have talked about the need to address some of the issues in mental health, and so I don't have any burning questions, even though Kansas did not put any money in Rosie. So that's my only question. This is between the two cornies. You know, it's between sunflower and corn.
Are you ready for a motion?
After Representative Smith, and I'm ready for a motion, Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll make this really quick. What are the folks at home, the local folks, what are they going to say about this application, about this grant request?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, as part of the application, we have letters of support from various local organizations, including the Mid-Valley Behavioral Health Care. They have been working with us on a lot of these ideas and doing things locally. They're fully supportive. The Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Directors have a letter of support in our grant application. I think it's a pretty impressive lineup of support that we have, and also from state agencies as well.
Yeah. And Rosie, thank you.
Sure,
I have to make this comment because Menninger's, which is, you know, the huge clinic and a huge organization that for years have been involved in this country on mental health issues, and Menninger's is in the state where both Bob Nichols and I come from, so that's why I said it's the corn and the sunflowers, and I didn't even mention the Jayhawks, but anyway, it's some of those things that when you're from a state that's memorable, and he and I were talking earlier because I told him that I went to visit an aunt back in Kansas, and, you know, as I crawled up in her attic and was just going through a lot of her old papers, and a part of them were some of the old tracts from the Menninger Clinic and they were missionaries before they became in the field of professional service and mental health treatment. So that's just a little trivia with that, Senator Gordley.
Well, Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Carter.
Thank you. Before I just want to say something to Representative Smith. I know that I probably, when I was in graduate school, years ago, and graduate degree in counseling, mental health and substance abuse was not a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably was one of the first program pieces that came through Oregon where you had different tracks of training in counseling, but we still have not married mental health and substance abuse together. Even so, this
This is an excellent opportunity, I think, to change or to wake up the curriculum design in our university systems, that today you can't train counselors to educate and train counselors to be good counselors without these components being a part of it. So I just want to know that you guys are going to write the university system knowing about this piece, and hopefully they can become engaged and we can graduate better counselors in the state.
That's a real good idea.
I also think we've wrestled on this committee in our last session with looking at both alcohol and drug and looking at mental health, and how do we bring the concurrence. We know that there is dual diagnosing, but how do you bring them together? And we know that one part of the system is dealing with one piece of it, and another part is dealing with another piece, and there is the need to bring all of this information together. If you talk to mental health, you know, I know of individuals that are in mental health, and they'll tell you that they self-diagnose through alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, they self-treat themselves through alcohol. And so I think it's huge that we need to bring these two pieces together for a better understanding, both from the counseling standpoint as a way to treat the individual. So anyway, with that, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Delighted to move authorization to apply for a grant of up to $1.1 million per year from the Department of Health and Human Services to improve treatment for people with co-occurring disorders.
Senator Gordley moves that we recommend to the full Committee of Ways and Means the Department of Human Services federal grant application for co-occurring substance-related and mental disorders. Is there any objection? Senator Gordley and member, you want to care to
be?
Senator, Representative Smith. I'm going to make you a senator. Yeah.
I have to talk to Senator Breyer about that.
You know, Madam Chair, I have to tell you, with all the talk about Kansas, I just kept looking at that door, pretty assured that Dorothy, Toto,
and our yellow brick
room. And the lion. And the red.
Thank you. Tomorrow we have House Bill 3629 and the tornadoes you can keep relating to warrants issued by the Department of Human Services.
Madam Chair, I just want to see, I have my daughter visiting with us today, Dee Dee.
And Dee Dee, welcome. Would you keep your mother in tow?
That's all
we're here. We are adjourned.